Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Well, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Let's welcome him back in fine fashion today. Fat Tony in the house on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. I'm Mike Dempsey, and you've put up with me for the past week, and God bless all of you who are still listening to 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Tony, was it the pimento cheese? Was it the so green it'll make your eyes bleed grass? Was it the subtle undulation and elevation changes that television can't quite capture? What was it about Augusta National?
One, there's nothing subtle about the elevation changes at Augusta National. I'm going to talk a lot about this tomorrow night on a Fat Tuesday, and since this is Jaguars Today, we're going to talk mostly football here, but it's unreal. You know, I've been watching this golf tournament basically my entire life, and this week, having been up there on Wednesday for the practice round, it was a completely different viewing experience, having seen what it actually was, how the course is actually laid out, where these elevation changes actually are, and just how severe they are that these players are dealing with. It's a completely different experience. Having been there, my mom asked me when I got home. I went with my dad and brother up to Augusta on Wednesday, and she asked, well, how was it? And I said, the best way to describe it is Augusta National is sport as art. It is sports as art. It was an unreal experience being up there and on that golf course.
So you watched the par 3 contest on Wednesday, and did you follow? What did you do? Do you pick out a hole?
Basically, you're going to pick out a hole.
Yeah.
The crowds that you see like during the tournament play that are on each of these holes are basically what there is at the par 3 too. And it's, you know, we go to the Players every year, and the Players is like a party, you know, where golf is being played.
Sure.
Is the way it feels a lot of the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a cool experience. A lot of people around here love going out there and sitting in the tents and pavilions and experiencing golf that way, which is fine. At Augusta, everybody in there was all about the golf, 100% about the golf. And I've been to practice rounds at the TPC before. It's a completely different feeling up there because everyone is so serious about the event that they're at. There's not even like this loose nature to the guys that we saw in the practice round on Wednesday. It is serious work that these guys are there to do. And it was the first time I was sitting on the fourth green, and I watched Paul Casey. He hit in the front greenside bunker.
Now, this is the fourth green that they have a separate nine-hole course,
yeah,
right?
I'm talking about actually on the course during a practice round.
Okay, fourth green.
So I was on the fourth green, and I saw Paul Casey hit a bunker shot that went about 25 feet past the hole and came back down 15 feet short of the hole. Watched it move 40 feet, and it's just unreal. His caddy immediately after that was standing up there as like a target point for him out of the bunker, picked up a ball, dropped it at his feet, it rolled 30 feet. Just dropping it on the ground, it rolled 30 feet down the front of this green. It's an unreal experience to be there and see it.
So did you eat a pimento loaf
I had sandwich? A pimento cheese sandwich.
You had to, didn't you?
I did. And it's when people talk about the prices out there, me, my brother, my dad, and my dad's friend all ate lunch. I had two sandwiches. My brother had two sandwiches. They each had a sandwich and a snack and a drink for all four of us. $21.50.
So how many sandwiches are we talking about?
We're talking six sandwiches, two
four
bags
drinks,
of chips, and four drinks $21.50.
Well, at least they're keeping those prices.
It's like going back in time. It's the best way to describe it, stepping onto that golf course, because you can't bring your phone or any of that kind of stuff on the course. You can bring a camera now, but you can't bring your phone. So lunch is really cheap. The prices are really low. They get you on the shop going out, because everybody buys something.
Of course.
And, you know, a shirt's like $80.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So everybody's buying something out of the golf shop, because where else are you going to get Masters gear except at the Masters?
Oh, you want the official Masters gear from the Augusta National Golf Shop.
I got a shirt and a hat.
It would have been nice if you had attended the Masters and the par 3 contest the week of Jordan Spieth's second consecutive Masters victory. Instead, it'll be one of the epic, not only epic Masters and golf collapses. Certainly, when you talk about a guy who's led seven consecutive rounds at the Masters, to do what he did in the span of three holes, bogey. I mean, he already let Willett back in, and then it absolutely collapsed on number 12. We're not going to break it down, and the boys on the drill did a fine job of that all morning long. You'll hear that on Sports Talk Radio all across America today, including, I'm sure, right here on 1010XL throughout the afternoon, and understandably so. But today, we're asking you, in your opinion, what are the three worst collapses in sports history that you can remember? You can include Jordan Spieth in there. We didn't want to limit it just to football. Football's a difficult sport to find collapses sometimes, I think, because it's unlike golf where you can evaporate a huge lead on one hole.
Sure.
Or baseball in a half inning. Football takes a little time. You see it coming more often than not. Doesn't mean there can't be collapses, and we've had some nominated already. So share your thoughts with us this morning on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Yes, he's back. And at 1010XL Tyler as well. We will get into Tony Aaron Colvin being suspended for the first four games of the season, a violation of the performance-enhancing drug policy. We'll talk about where that leaves the Jags. And it's been floating around for a little while now. They certainly didn't catch the Jags by surprise. Trust us on this one. They were prepared for this even prior to free agency. They knew this was going to be a factor, and so we'll talk about that. Rasheen Mathis's place in the pantheon of great Jaguars, we'll discuss that. John Oger is going to stop by from Jaguars.com coming up in about 25 minutes from now. If you want to be part of the program and discuss any of those things we threw out there today or any aspect of Jaguar football or the National Football League, 641-1010 is always the phone number. It's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Welcome him back. Fat Tony is back with us. It's Jaguars Today. We're live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
When I first flew in yesterday, I thought I was going to see beaches, but I guess the airport's kind of in the middle of nowhere. So that was the first shocker, but it's been class act so far. You know, everybody's treated me really nicely, and the accommodations have been great, so I'm just going to say enough.
Say enough, except about that airport out there in the middle of nowhere, Tony. That's Ryan Kelly. I don't have anything bad to say about it, except for that airport. It's kind of a jog out to that airport, I hear. That's Ryan Kelly, the center for the Alabama Crimson Tide, the Remington Award winner, named after Dave Remington, former Nebraska Cornhusker, given to the best collegiate center of the season. And a lot of people think Ryan Kelly could be the apple of the Jaguars' eye in the second round. Tony, I've gotten understandable tweets and texts and Facebook questions and what have you over the weekend. I'm sure you did as well when the news about Aaron Colvin came out on Friday. The news dump came out on Friday. Let's be clear, right? I mean, you get this Friday. That information did not become known Friday, say, at 3:45, and then the press release was sent at 4 o'clock. Those things are put out strategically for a reason, and that's the team's prerogative. But the bottom line is Aaron Colvin failed a test for failed a test that is determined to be for performance-enhancing drugs. The way I understand it, because that was as inartfully spoken as you could have a sentence be, is that he believes he took something over the counter that caused a positive result. I won't call it a false positive. There are things in over-the-counter supplements, some over-the-counter supplements, that are outlawed by the National Football League. As we all know, every time this issue comes up, a lot of guys claim that. There's no way to prove otherwise. And regardless, ultimately, you're responsible for what you put in your body. But the bottom line is, again, from our understanding, the Jaguars support Aaron Colvin. They don't want him to be suspended for four games, obviously.
But of course not.
The questions I'm getting this weekend, Tony, are, does this impact the Jags' draft strategy? And I don't think it does for this reason. I don't think they think Aaron Colvin is a major ongoing risk. I don't think they're worried that there's going to be a recidivism issue with this. This isn't street drugs. This is performance-enhancing drugs. You don't usually have guys, that I can recall, too many instances of guys having multiple issues with the performance-enhancing drug policy. So they signed Prince Amukamara. I think it's 50-50. If they maybe even longer odds that they would have signed Prince Amukamara had Aaron Colvin not had a suspension facing him. I think he is in the insurance policy already in-house under a one-year deal. This team has got to know, Tony, that they need to get off to a quick start. They can't afford a 1-3 start, an 0-4 start. They can't afford for the noise to build up in Jaguar Nation, understandably upset they would be if they had an 0 for first month of the season. I'm not saying Prince Amukamara guarantees that they won't have a slow start to the season, but he gives you a pretty solid starting option that you don't have to rely on either A, guy like Nick Marshall, who's got limited experience playing the position, or B, maybe a rookie getting his first action in the National Football League. You can throw Devon House and Amukamara out there as your starters for the first month and at least feel like you've got a couple of professional cornerbacks.
Yeah, and that's probably why they went out and signed Amukamara. But from the perspective of what the first month of the season is going to look like for the Jags, it would be disingenuous to not point out that we also say you play three corners a lot in this league. I mean, a lot in this league. And you feel pretty good about House and Amukamara, Colvin, if those are your three corners. Now you are talking about a month where you're trying to figure out what you're going to be doing with that third corner spot. Is it Grotz? Is it Marshall? Those are the guys that you're going to have to put on the field and leave them exposed for a lot more time than you have been. Now, you should be better in the back end anyway, with Amukamara coming in and Tashawn Gibson hopefully giving you a step up there at the free safety spot. You're hoping your pass rush is better early in the season than it was at any point last year in 2015, but you are still a team that you sign Amukamara and you feel good about, these are our three guys that are going to be on the field all the time. Well, now you got a month where one of those three and the guy that you really like in that slot position is kind of your quicks guy isn't going to be available to you for a month. I'm curious to see what they may do. I don't think it means that it means Hargraves is going to be the pick at five. I don't think that it affects their early draft strategy. But this was a team that, with or without Colvin, I think would have been looking. They got Amukamara for 1 year. So I think at some point in the early rounds, if there's a corner that they like, he was going to be selected anyway. This may put a little bit more impetus with that, where maybe they do consider a corner in the second or third round a little bit more because they know they only have Amukamara for a year and they got, you're not going to count too much on a rookie, even if he's a second or third round pick anyway, but they have to be thinking down the road at that position anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't think, like you said, it doesn't change if they don't feel Vernon Hargraves is the best player available. They're not going to reach for Vernon Hargraves over somebody else that they like better with the fifth pick of the draft. You're going to take, I believe, the guy that you really feel like is the best talent at that point in time. I don't know if you saw Monday Morning Quarterback by Peter King. He talked to, he said 10 people over the weekend that basically have control over their team's drafts. And they weren't giving specifics, but the range of where they felt the players really started to fall off was somewhere around maybe the 11th pick, that there are maybe 11 premium players in this draft. And after that, you might take the next group all the way down through pick 50, and you can flip them all up and jumble them up together. You're not going to take a guy. Now, I don't know. Let's assume Vernon Hargraves is in that upper elite group, but are you going to move him up in that group because of your team's needs? I don't think they're going to do that. That's right. Why I'm saying I don't think it's going to change the strategy. We've been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks, that we think they're drafting at least one, if not more than one, cornerback anyway on this football team for some of the reasons you just laid out. I don't think they get drastically different here on us in the next couple of weeks simply because this situation is in place. And again, it's a situation that the team knew about for a while. That is in part, I believe, maybe a large part of why they signed Prince Amukamara, and they feel like at least they've covered it up a little bit to that degree. But you're right. Hopefully an improved pass rush, whoever's playing in the slot for the first month of the season, will be able to get something done in a positive way for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Maybe a rookie when it's all said and done. You know, as things stand right now, I think they'll still – I think it's unlikely to me that they get – the right trade offer that induces them to move, especially if they are in that group that feels like there is a group of, say, 10 to 12 elite guys. Are you going to risk, say, in that St. Louis Rams scenario, fall, or the L.A. Rams scenario, falling back to 15, no matter what the compensation right. is? You need to win now if you're this football team as much as humanly possible. I know that Gus and Dave have said they're going to do what they feel is in the best long-term interest of this football team. It's not just about them and their job security, but everybody here. It's not just Gus and Dave that needs wins. This entire organization, these players need wins. At some point, if you don't win, you get a regime change, and the new guy who comes in is going to say, well, these guys aren't winning together. I'm going to start tinkering with the roster. So it's incumbent on everybody to get off to a better start this season. And, you know, again, I think they've addressed that in free agency, And we'll just see what the draft brings. Again, I think they're going to load up on that side of the football. So, you know, you can make the argument if they take two corners, you can feel that, hey, maybe they wouldn't have done that had Colvin not been suspended. I don't know if we're ever going to really know the answer to that.
No, and I look, this is a such an important season for everybody in the building here in Jacksonville with Caldwell and the pressure that's going to be on Bradley to get this thing going in 2016. And we've talked about it since they retained Bradley. Look like a playoff team. That's the expectation, is that this team is going to take that major step forward in 2016. Our heads are going to roll, and now you're going into a 2016 season where a guy that you really like at that position specifically, it's not just that you like him at corner, but you like him as your guy in the slot, and that's such an important position in today's NFL, to not have him for a month, what does that potentially mean for this defense? Just the drop-off that they could potentially have at that specific position, and if it's only a play or two in a game where it really bites them, that's enough. In the National Football League, yeah, that's enough to really put you in a hole, and for a team that can't afford to start in a hole this year, the way they have in the first 3 years of the Bradley regime, it's just a bad way to start things. It is to have that kind of thing hanging over your head before you even get into the most important season of your career, if you're Gus Bradley, to have this guy not be there for a month. Now, does the organization still say they believe in the guy? They're not worried about the long-term ramifications of this thing? No, that's all good, and that's fine. But for 2016, missing a quarter of the season is major for this football team as they try to figure out what they're going to be doing in that secondary.
Do you think, though, let's say that Colvin wasn't suspended and they didn't sign Prince Amukamara.
Right.
Would they be better off? I mean, I don't think they would be.
No.
Because now you've got a guy who can fill in for that month, and then when Colvin gets back, presuming no setbacks for anybody else, now you've got another guy in the mix that may not have been there. You know, that's the thing. I don't know if we'll ever know definitively, but we'll certainly ask Dave Caldwell, you know, how much was that move, that signing, predicated on the knowledge that you were going to be a man down for the first 4 weeks? And I would think, you know, that a considerable amount probably went into that. So
no, I think so, too. I don't know if that's the right strategy for the Jags, if that is really what it came down to. We're going to lose Colvin for the first four games, so let's seriously look at a corner. Because even if you have Colvin here in Jacksonville next year, who are your three? Like, if you don't have Amukamara, who are your three? Because now you're looking at Grotz or a draft pick, basically, again, to be playing that corner spot. So I thought it was a need going into the offseason. They probably had to see it as somewhat of a need. It became more of a need when you know that Colvin's got this impending suspension coming. But if they weren't going to look seriously at an Amukamara or somebody at that level, then I think it would be a mistake for this organization.
And maybe they would have. You know, it's not like he doesn't fit the age profile, right? He's right there in kind of that sweet spot, and the chance to get him for one season on a prove-it-to-me contract, you would think you're going to get a highly motivated player coming in. So, you know, maybe they would have gone that direction anyway. Look, it's not ideal not having Aaron Colvin. I think they can get by the first month. I don't think that that's going to be, when we look back at the end of the season, that's the reason that they didn't make the playoffs or did make the playoffs. Well, we don't know that, but that's my guess, is that will be the case for the first 4 weeks of the season. Now, that's dependent on not having, you know, other major injuries in the secondary to compound that and things like that going forward. So if you'd like to get in and weigh in on that, 641-1010, do you think it has any impact on the Jags' overall draft plans now that you know the information's public, at least, something that they've known for a while, that Aaron Colvin is facing a four-game suspension for a violation of the performance-enhancing drug policy. You can weigh in on that on both the phone lines and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. A couple other numbers I wanted to get to coming out of that Peter King article, and we'll try to do that a little bit later on. Talking about the strength of the draft, here's a couple of quotes that he got from some of his evaluators this weekend. These are four different guys, all basically making the same comment. These are draft decision makers right now. They said the first one said 25 to 55 is the same player to me. So basically, any pick between 25 and 55, you may as well trade back and accumulate more picks, because you're going to get the same level quality of player in their minds. The next guy said pick 11 to 40 is the same guy. So, well, that's pretty good if you have the 38th pick, right? Because you feel like you're going to get maybe a top 15 talent based on that. The next guy says 18 to 48, you can get the same player. You see a theme building right here. There's the cutoff changes depending on the evaluator, but there's a wide swath of players where the general consensus is it's not going to pay to trade up in that range because just let talent fall to you. And so for people suggesting the Jags may trade up, they still may because they may not agree with these evaluations. And there may be one specific player that say they grade as the 12th best guy that keeps sliding down the board. That's all it takes to incentivize you to move up. And then the final guy said, load me up with twos and threes in this draft. That's where I'd want a lot of picks. So we'll see if the Jags are able to do anything to capitalize on that, whether it's moving up or moving back. But it seems like that there's a wide range of middle class is what these talent evaluators are saying. There's a group at the top, maybe 10 to 12 to 15 guys that are considered truly first-round guys, and the next group is very big, and they're all, as an overall grade, kind of interchangeable from each other. John Osier is going to join us coming up next. We'll talk about the Aaron Colvin suspension and what that means for the Jags and their potential draft plans, as well as the impending retirement as a Jaguar of Rasheen Mathis, the greatest defensive back in my mind in team history. We'll discuss him more as the week goes on as well. He's going to have a ceremony down here at the stadium on Wednesday afternoon to officially retire as a Jacksonville Jaguar. That's coming up. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, live at EverBank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Johnny O's in the house.
Hi, Jags.
Fat Tony's back, John, and it's a big day for us here. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday.
You guys talking golf?
I feel like we should have a group hug.
You guys are into it, aren't you?
We talked a little bit of golf. Okay. I mean, yeah, we're definitely. I was bummed, man. I mean, I Tony knows this. Tony knows when it's NCAA tournament time, I fill up my bracket. I root for that bracket, damn it, until I am eliminated.
Sure.
I don't care about a good story. I don't care about an upset. And I
you care about you.
I care about me.
That's right.
I care about me. But when it came to my fantasy golf pick was Jason Day. And I said Thursday, I'd rather have Spieth win, you know, because he's the young American who had a chance to put up, you know, that phenomenal, maybe be a 10-major winner, something like that.
Not, it still does. I mean,
hey, still does, but it just makes you, to me, it makes me appreciate just how much of a, just a, you know, killer closer Tiger was early on, because he never lost a lead that, you know, if he had the lead, now he didn't come from behind, people criticize him for that, but damn, he wasn't in a position to be behind.
Well, for a long time, he was always seven shots. I mean,
but he always closed it out on Sunday. You never would have seen Tiger at his peak early on. Tiger would have won that thing by eight yesterday. Right. He would have kept going and extended that lead out.
Well, thing about Tiger, they always talked about, and I don't project myself as a golf guy, but the thing about Tiger that you always read about was even in addition to the physical gifts that were unbelievable and the drive was the mental focus, the mental concentration, you know, usually didn't have an, you know, and I guess from what I'm hearing about golf, Spieth going for the shot that he went for on 12 was a mental error.
I don't think it was, no, I think it was a physical error. I think, I mean, he,
to
try to maybe cut it short, but the fact that he hit it 6 inches fat or whatever he hit it fat.
Right.
You know, you can argue if he had hit it by the pin and it spun back into the water, maybe that's a mental error. But he didn't even come close to carrying the weight.
Well, I thought you always went beyond the green or beyond the pin on that hole to make sure it didn't come back if you had the lead.
Maybe, but when you're sitting there already in the water hitting three from
the
fairway.
No, I meant the first one.
Oh, you mean the tee shot?
The tee shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the tee shot. Well, mental error, no, I think it might have been a bad swing.
Sure.
But regardless, you know.
Regardless, Tiger didn't put himself in that situation. That's why you're.
What do you project yourself as, by the way?
Who, me?
Yeah. Jag guy?
I would think I know a bit more about football than I do golf. I covered a few players in my day.
Have you seen? It's tough to equate a collapse like that. And I think most people would say, and no offense to Danny Willett. Danny Willett was the 12th ranked player in the world coming into the weekend. He's a great golfer.
Well, he went, 500? I mean,
he shot a bogey-free 67 yesterday, and he was putting pressure on Spieth, which may have played into when you look up after 11, you got a one-shot lead. You just had a five-shot lead. You're like, how the hell did this happen? But people are going to remember this as Jordan Spieth collapsing and giving away the Masters. Can you think of one or two, maybe not perfect equivalencies in football, but the one Tony and I were mentioning before the show, I don't know if you think of it as a collapse. Peyton Manning with the 21 points on Monday Night Football against the Buccaneers in the final 5 minutes. Is that a collapse? That, to me, is, I think you see that more through the prism of, wow, what a great comeback.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's usually in football because there's another team sort of celebrating and gaining momentum as the bad things happen. You can at least make the argument in football that if there's a collapse, you know, the Seahawks-Packers championship game last year, I remember, was perceived as a collapse by Green Bay. I mean, there were things that Green Bay did in the second half that said collapse. At the same time, the Seahawks made plays enough where the storyline afterward could be talking to Russell Wilson about the touchdown pass and maybe take a little bit of the glare off of the team that collapsed. In golf, you know, it's such a solo effort. That.
It is, but like we said, if Willett didn't put himself, we could be talking more about Willett saying, man, the guy played fantastic.
But the emotion.
Just like Faldo did when he overtook Greg Norman.
Same, I mean, but it's, I think golf writers and golf lore tend to be able to focus on the collapse maybe more than you can in football. You know, because again, in any collapse in a team sport where it's one-on-one competition like that, you can always, it's more fun to write about the comeback and the victor and the overcoming the odds. So the storyline tends to go that way. In golf, with it being solo, it's really the only sport where there's not sort of a one-on-one competition, I think. You know, gymnastics, but it's a little different in that sense.
All right, let's move on to some other things here. We've got John Osier, Jaguars.com, here with us. News came out Friday, although I don't think it was news to the team at that point, that Aaron Colvin was facing a four-game suspension to start the season. Let's start with this. Presuming they knew, and I believe they did at the time they signed Prince Amukamara, how much was that signing dependent on the knowledge that Colvin would miss a month?
Well, it sure sounds like it, and I remember when they signed that deal, it was a little, I don't say odd. It made sense once you looked at it. He said, okay, they can move Colvin inside to the nickel, and then you know, you've got a guy on a one-year deal, and it sort of frees you up for the draft. It certainly still enabled you to have Jalen Ramsey in play. That signing didn't preclude that. So would they have done the signing had Aaron not been in this situation? Probably, but it certainly made it make a lot more sense.
Right. Do you think now, or I guess, again, this is not news to them.
It made sense either way. It's really, it really makes sense now.
Does it factor in?
I don't think
so. Or how big does it factor in at all into your draft plans?
Well, I don't think it factors in much at all at number five, because I don't think you draft, you're hoping at number five that you're getting a 5 to 10 year player.
You're not bumping Vernon Hargreaves a few spots just because of a team need.
I can't. No, but
and as an example,
yeah. If you liked him as the fourth player on your board because the other three guys are gone anyway, I think they'd still take him. But I think
you're hoping your number five pick is a core player that you're building around, that you're picking up magazines the next year saying this is why this team's good, not let's go cover Aaron Colvin's spot for four games.
Right.
So I think the Prince signing has a lot more to do with this story than the number five pick does.
And we may not ever definitively know this, but let's say that had Aaron Colvin not faced the suspension, they wouldn't have signed Prince Amukamara, okay?
Right.
If that were the case, I think they're better off now because now you've got him. And then when Colvin comes back, you've got them both.
Right.
You know, for the
rest signing
of the
still makes some sense.
It does.
Now you've just got a situation where, but I do think it may play in a little bit later in the draft. Maybe you take a corner at three, meaning at third round, where you might have taken him fifth round before. Maybe you're looking for somebody you're a little more comfortable playing with right away. if you're flipping a coin and all things are equal in the third round on a corner or a defensive end or whatever, maybe you push that up a little bit at that point, but marginally.
Marginally, right, if any. And I don't know if we're ever going to be able to know that for sure either.
I probably won't know. But if you're sitting there looking at the board and you're going, okay, we got corner or we got linebacker, they're probably equal. Well, this guy can play a little quicker. Maybe we get him for the first. Okay, yeah.
Right.
But I don't think it's major.
Tony and I have been talking about this for a while, that they would draft at least one corner, maybe more corners,
right,
we thought. And then, you know, the information, I don't know how long you've known about the pending suspension, but it's been floating out there for a little while. Let me just put it that way. Tony and I had heard about this,
right,
a few weeks ago. And so, you know, we weren't in at liberty to discuss,
sure,
it, and, that, and we knew it was going to come out, so it wasn't like any big secret or anything like that. And now that it's out there, it didn't really change my focus that much. And, you know, in what we talked about in terms of needing to draft a corner, maybe late in the draft,
right,
maybe you add an extra body, something like that.
It doesn't make them weaker at your starting 11, but for four games, it certainly makes you weaker at nickel, which is a pretty key thing, because Aaron Colvin's a really good nickel player. I mean, I don't think he was as strong on the outside last year as certainly he wanted to be. But as a nickel player, as a guy who can blitz, he's a very aware player. I don't think he was as good in coverage last year as he was playing the entire field and blitzing. So his loss hurts.
What are we, 2.5 weeks, basically, from the draft, right?
Yeah,
Two weeks from Thursday. Day one, what is your top three wish list, your personal one? If you were in charge of the draft, who are the three players in which order that you would hope would be available at number five?
I mean, Bosa, and again, not in this order.
But give me the order.
Okay, give you the order.
If you have the order.
I'd say Jack Ramsey.
Okay.
And Bosa.
You had to say one of them first,
yeah,
even though they're close.
Right.
Jack Ramsey and Bosa. All right, so basically a 1-1A situation with Ramsey and Jack. And
yeah,
Bosa
just because
the third guy.
I guess like so many fans and so many observers, you start, as the draft approaches, you fall in love with the speed, athleticism, playmaking, maybe a little over the conventional wisdom. And the conventional wisdom is pass rusher, defensive end, trumps, the closer you get to the ball, trumps playmaking away from the ball. But these guys are special talents, so you wonder if that trumps that.
Right.
And that's the dilemma.
Whether it's true or not, I think collectively, some of the media, ourselves, the fans, it's hard not to buy into the overall narrative. And the narrative seems to be that Jack and Ramsey first, maybe has this elite athleticism that, mm-hmm, is rare, that you don't see come in at that size, speed ratio, all the things he can do. Jack has the great speed, the ability to,
right,
cover, and that Bosa is a good player, right?
Right.
That's kind of,
right,
that's become an insult now. Yeah, he's a good player,
right,
all right, but does he wow you? Whether that's true or not, I still see Bosa ranked as a top player on some of the pundits' boards,
yeah,
out there, but I think there's a coalescing of opinion that he's kind of the fallback option.
There's
the three.
This perception among some of the mock drafters that Bosa's, quote, falling. And I heard from a couple people at the owners' meetings that's not quite as true once you get inside rooms as it is maybe on mock drafts on the internet, if that makes any sense. That,
sure,
he's more liked in terms of scouts and GMs look at him and say, this guy's going to make it. And I know he's going to make it and be really, really good for a long time. So safe pick. Does that smell like a safe pick? Maybe, but he's not as, quote, out of favor as he maybe is on Twitter. If that makes, you know,
understand.
Makes
no,
sense.
Totally,
yeah,
understand. Totally understand. And, but that's where most people most GMs, including Dave Caldwell, are not giving you the kind of nuggets to inform your opinion on how they really feel about those.
No,
guys.
I don't want him to.
I want him to after the draft.
Right.
And he will, too. He'll tell you,
sure,
either on or off the record kind of how he feels about guys. Well, we got you here for a moment. Rasheen Mathis will have a retirement ceremony,
yep,
on Wednesday. Best defensive back to me in team history, arguably best defensive player in team history. Where does he stand among the pantheon of great defensive players they've had?
Well, here? It's funny. There's still sort of – and – I missed this because I didn't cover most of Rasheen's career here. But I get the feeling that he's not as appreciated by fans as maybe he should be. That there was some criticism of him at some point in his career that sort of overwhelms for some people how good he was for a long time. He was a 10-year guy here, a 3-year guy with Detroit, started until the end of his career. 13 years as a starter at that position in the NFL is really, really impressive. I know when I was with the Colts, there were a handful of guys on the defense that the Colts worried about. It was the two guys in the middle, the two defensive tackles, Mike Pete, and it was
Rasheen.
It was Rasheen.
Yeah.
And that was who you worried about. Now, they got the best of Rasheen some, and Rasheen got the best of them some. That's how it is when you're going one-on-one with a guy like Marvin Harrison. But, you know, Tony Brackens for a flash, and I don't want to diminish what Tony Brackens did, but when Tony Brackens was on, when he was right, he was the best defensive player that's ever played here. But didn't do it for that long, and Rasheen did it for 10 years, and I say he's a pride guy.
I think he might be eventually. I don't think this is coinciding with them.
No. I'm not saying
right.
Eventually, that on Wednesday. But when you walk into the stadium, if you looked up and saw his name in 5 years, yeah, makes sense.
Does he get extra credit being the Jacksonville kid?
Well,
maybe a little.
It's
right?
Okay to have good story. You know, it's okay to have.
And he's such a good guy. And
yeah.
I'm not saying that alone. There are plenty of good guys that have played here, but there's no drawback to Rasheen Matthews.
There's nothing wrong with honoring class.
And he's a classy guy.
He's a classy guy.
Remarked on it.
It's
so
okay
many
to
times.
Have class play into things.
He,
it's become vogue to say it's not.
Daryl Smith, Paul Spicer, Rasheen, guys that you could always go to in the locker room after the worst loss or the most exhilarating victory, and they talk as long as you want.
The man put up with Vito for 10 years. Mike.
And
10
years.
Crack.
Didn't
and
crack.
Never crack.
Never crack.
So, hey,
put
him on the wall for that.
Just for that alone. All right. John Osher, what do you have coming up next couple days?
Obviously, most of it will be geared toward Rasheen. I believe he's going to be on Jaguars.com Live on Wednesday. And, you know, spend a couple of days honoring a really good guy.
No doubt about it. All right, buddy. We'll see you in a couple days ourselves.
And then it'll be me talking to a really good guy. How about that?
Oh,
that'd
be awesome. All right. All right, John Osher, at John Osher on Twitter. Check him out, of course, at Jaguars.com, the senior writer, and quite frequently here as a member of the Jaguars Today crew as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday coming back to Dayton football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Okay, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Some famous birthdays for this date. That's where we will begin. Dan Fortman, an NFL guard for the Chicago Bears. I still am not sure how this works out. I guess the Pro Bowl does not predate the All-Pro team, but he was a 3-time Pro Bowler. Dan Fortman was a 6-time All-NFL performer, however, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1965, born on this date in 1916. He passed away at the age of 79 back in 1995. Terry Cousin was a Jaguar for 3 years. Now he turns 41 years old today. Cousin born on this date in 1975. And happy 25th to Telvin Smith, born on this date in 1991. You know what I'd get Telvin Smith for his birthday? I'd get him Miles Jack for his birthday to play with for the next however many years. And most importantly, on this date, April 11, 2016, Fat Tony came home to Jaguars.
Oh,
today.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're right here on town at Gate Parkway. And if you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com and get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Former New Orleans Saints defensive end Will Smith was shot and killed following a traffic accident on Saturday night after a confrontation with Cardell Hayes, who is being charged with second-degree murder. The accident itself was reportedly minor, with Hayes running into the back of Smith's car and propelling him forward into the car in front of him that had some friends of Smith in it. Hayes did not enter a plea during an initial court appearance yesterday and had his bond set at $1 million. Conviction on a second-degree murder charge carries a sentence of life imprisonment. Hayes' attorney has stated that his client was not the aggressor in the incident and expects the toxicology report to shed some light on what happened Saturday night. Some details are coming out about Hayes as well. Cardale Hayes has worked security for the Saints in the past. The city of New Orleans recently settled a wrongful death lawsuit with Hayes after his father was shot and killed by police in 2005. And there are unconfirmed rumors that Smith had eaten dinner with the police officer that Hayes believes killed his father earlier Saturday evening. Again, the details of what happened earlier in the night are unconfirmed at this point. Johnny Manziel has found a new roommate, and he made sure the world knows about it by talking to TMZ while partying out in Hollywood. Tyler?
So are you worried about the image problems, or does it faze you at all?
Image problems. Hey, listen, yeah. Here's about image problems.
I'm just curious. That's what they want
to
know.
I'm living out here with my guy, Von Miller.
Okay.
Everybody knows Von Miller.
Yeah,
Super
he's cool. Yeah,
hold on. Super Bowl MVP. Everybody can see it.
There you go.
Super Bowl MVP, Von Miller, my brother. I'm living with him right now.
Yeah.
We're getting our lives together.
So you might go in the Broncos, perhaps.
Listen, here, you can hold it. I can hold it. So the Broncos, John Elway, great dude.
Yeah.
Kubiak, Aggie, my man. Listen, great organization. Anywhere I get picked up, bro,
okay.
It's a blessing.
You're going to get picked up somewhere. You're confident.
Somewhere, bro. Listen, whatever happens, I love ball. I want to play.
Yeah.
Team I want to go to.
Do you think they care if you're partying a little bit? Is there anything wrong with
partying,
that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with partying.
Yeah.
There's a difference between partying and being out of control.
Yeah, you're not getting in trouble for anything.
Man, you've seen me here how many nights in a row? Five, six?
A lot of times, yeah.
Exactly.
Where do you want to go?
What have we been doing since we've been here? Walking out,
I don't know,
being chill.
You always seem calm,
being cool.
Yeah,
I'm cool.
You're cool.
I'm not drunk.
Yeah, okay. I didn't say you're drunk.
Man. We're just hanging out, enjoying great food. I go my guy John Tesserian is here. Let's do it.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't say I'm drunk.
Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel and Von Miller, now roommates, both attended Texas A&M. Miller said that if it were up to him, that Manziel would already be a member of the Denver Broncos. It's a good look for you, Johnny. With all the questions that everyone's had about you since that Heisman campaign and too much partying, it's a good look to drunkenly talk to TMZ about partying's okay, bro.
5 or 6 days in a row you see me here, right? I can't keep track.
No. One more story here. Bruce Arians, head coach of the Arizona Cardinals at a high school football coaches clinic over the weekend, has been an outspoken guy when it comes to defending the sport of football and people playing it and some of the people that are out there protesting against the sport. More kids reportedly not playing football at younger ages. Arians obviously upset about that. And he found a new target this time. He talks about it's not the dads that are the problem. It's the moms.
And we got to make sure that moms get the message. All right? Because that's who's afraid of our game right now. It's not dads. It's moms. You know, the head really has no business being in the game. There's a lot of different teachers. But when I was taught how to tackle and how to block, it was on a two-man sled. And you did it with your shoulder pads. That's still the best way to do it. There really isn't any place for your face in the game. I would beg all of you to continue to learn more about what they're now calling rugby-style tackling.
And there you have it. That is the Honda driver on the NFL.
Didn't Bruce Arians a few weeks ago say anybody who would suggest that their kids shouldn't play football is a fool? I believe is the term he used.
Yes.
Now apparently now we know it's you moms who are fools. Bruce Arians is upset with you. He dropped a few F-bombs in there that were edited out as well in describing this. I mean, you know, I'm guessing, Tony, if we reviewed the film of the Arizona Cardinals, there'd be more than a few guys using, quote, their face on the defensive side of the football. So, Bruce, what are you talking about? I mean, isn't that what they're talking about? Let's find ways to make this game safer. And until we do, I don't think it's an unreasonable fear for a parent to have to say, hey, there's a lot of uncertainty here. And we may not know until 20 years later that we're subjecting our kid to the potential for really severely debilitating stuff. I mean, look, you're talking about parents. And I get it. You could be overprotective as well, but that's the position they're coming from.
Yeah.
You know, you've got – they're trying to protect their kids. You got the other hand, Tony, a completely different story, but going in a different direction, you have Tyrann Mathieu tweeting about the Will Smith story, and Tyrann Matthew's from New Orleans. Will Smith played for the Saints for a long time, and they had decided to make him retire his number, I think, with the team, you know, make him part of their own Ring of Honor kind of thing, retire as a Saint. This was prior to his death this weekend. He got killed this weekend. Tyrann Mathieu, among other things, and I heard Jeff Prosser discussing this. That's how I was tipped off to this. He said, when it comes to kids, and I'm not going to read every single quote in here, but basically there's a lot of kids that are growing up that don't have access to education or recreational opportunities, don't have fathers in the picture, and all these things. And he goes on to say all they have is music to influence them, and if you listen closely to music nowadays, it's brainwashing these kids to believe that drugs and killing are the cool thing to do, which is why I'm dropping an album, because blah, 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 because that's not cool, and being a father and being able to provide is what's cool. All those are excellent sentiments.
Sure.
I don't know if any of them apply to this particular instance with this guy who was 28 years old. He was not some kid. He was a former, he's been described as a New Orleans City football star. So he had some kind of support system in place, be it coaching or something that was enabling him to excel in football. I don't think, it doesn't sound like he was a kid just left on the scrap heap. He has issues. Legal issues with the police officer who's dining with Will Smith later in the night. He gets into an altercation with Will Smith and immediately goes to the gun, which leads me to believe this guy has motives other than he's just listening to some hip hop music, which gave him the wrong idea about right. What is cool to do. I mean, it's a message to me that if you want to spread that message, fine, but make sure it applies to the instance that you're describing. Otherwise, it's going to fall on deaf ears, I think. To me, I hear that, and I'm like, what does that have to do with this situation?
Yeah, a little bit. I can understand where Matthew's coming from, though, and apparently he knew the shooter in this incident as well from his time in that New Orleans area. So Matthew has some kind of personal relationship with this guy and called him a coward, among other things. There on his Twitter profile.
When you shoot a guy in the back, that's probably going to get you called. Right, shoot her in the leg. But he shot Will Smith in the back, murdered him by shooting him in the back.
And it sounds like this is the details that keep coming out of the story. And who knows how, we don't know, those haven't been confirmed, right? I don't know for sure that Will Smith had dinner with this cop or why he would have been at dinner with this police officer.
Reported.
Right, we just don't know some of the reasons behind that. But it's a terrible, terrible incident. I'm not sure if this is the one that you want to stand up and say hip-hop is the reason this kind of thing happened in this particular case. I think that there is something to be said for if there is a problem in New Orleans where Tyrann Mathieu has been close to it and said they're not providing for the kids in this community the kind of support that they need. If he feels like there's a message to be sent, I'm not sure this is the news story to send it on. I'm fine with Tyrann Mathieu standing up for the kids in that city and saying that things need to change. The way they're being taught needs to change. The way they're being provided for needs to be changed. I'm not sure that this guy, who it sounds like had motive specifically with Will Smith, is the story that you want to build that kind of thing on. It just sounds like the wrong platform.
It almost sounds like a bit of excuse making. Like, he's a product of his environment. What did you expect? He's just another one who slipped through the cracks. That's not what the initial reporting on this case seems to indicate, at least to me.
No.
So that's all I'm saying. Don't let a good message be, you know, thrown out because it's not pertinent to the specific example that you're using to highlight this message right now.
No, if it helps somebody for Tyrann Mathieu to say what he said, then fine. I'm all for it. Because if there are people who need that kind of help and support, then they should get it.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, if I look at this guy and say, well, wait a minute, how does this apply to him? What are you saying here? He's 28 years old. Again, he's not a kid. And I don't know if he's been in and out of trouble for the last 10 years or not since he turned 18, but I haven't heard that that's been the case. I don't know. I just think you got to be careful because people throw the baby out with the bathwater, and you don't want the bathwater, but you do want the baby, and the baby is the message. Don't have it the fact that it may not apply to this guy get lost, the good message that you're trying to put out there, at least in the eyes of Tyrann Mathieu. That's it, off the soapbox. I don't even think I was really on the soapbox there. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Give us, in your opinion, the three biggest collapses in sports history, if you want to say in honor of what Jordan Spieth did yesterday, gagging it up all over the course at Augusta National on a three-hole stretch from 10, 11, and 12 on Amen Corner. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you as we continue along. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the number. Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit Guns4Jax. That's Guns, the number 4, JAX.com. Or stop by South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. We'll come back with more Jag talk, including Rasheen Mathis retiring as a Jag on Wednesday. More thoughts on that straight ahead on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tori Petri here with Lions cornerback Rasheen Mathis in Jacksonville, Florida, where Rasheen makes his offseason home. Here to chat with Rasheen a little bit about his future plans. Rasheen, what have you decided about your future in the NFL?
It's been a long 13 years. A great 13 years. So I don't know if I would say long. Most people would say long, but I'll say an awesome 13 years. I think it's time for me to hang up the cleats. The Lord has blessed me with a long career and do great on and off the field and inside the locker room. So I think it's time. It's time. It's time for me to hang up the cleats.
That was Rasheen Mathis back in February with DetroitLions.com, of course, his most recent team, when he announced his retirement. And, of course, he will now retire officially as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars, sign a one-day contract coming up this Wednesday, as has become a custom whenever a player stays with a franchise for a long time, particularly if they leave and go somewhere else. They like to come home and end where they began their career. And, of course, Rasheen, an Inglewood kid. He was Inglewood, right? Yes. I want to say it was Inglewood. Is that right?
Sounds
right.
You're
shaking your head. I need full thumbs up, double thumbs up confirmation. I'm almost positive of that because my wife used to work at Inglewood, and I'm 99.9% sure that's the school he went to. Of course, BCC, and then your Jacksonville Jaguars, and that's a pretty good way to go. Don't have to live in Detroit until you've been in the league for 10 years.
Yeah, it was Inglewood.
All the money you want, you can live anywhere you like. Inglewood High School, pride of. Rasheen Mathis will retire. Hey, Jack, Tony, do you agree? Is it that simple? Is he the best defensive back in team history?
Yeah, I think he's the best defensive back in team history, and I think the numbers bear that out. I was looking at some of the, again, defensive numbers in team history. He's got 30 interceptions, which is 15 more than anybody else in team history, with Aaron Beasley coming in second behind him. Obviously, Beasley didn't play here as long as Rasheen Mathis, but still the numbers bear out for Rasheen that 10 years here, he accomplished that. He's also, and this is for a guy who was criticized for this aspect of his game for the last 3 or 4 years that he was here, it's pretty remarkable. He's third in team history in tackles. Rasheen Mathis is third in team history in tackles behind, I think, Daryl Smith and Donovan Darius, the only two guys that are ahead of him on that all-time list. So I think he's the best defender this team's ever had, certainly the best defensive back.
You do think he's the best defender the team's ever had. I do, too, and I think you can make solid arguments for probably a half dozen guys. But for me, it's not just about the peak, because you have guys who made more Pro Bowls than Rasheen. It's the peak with the longevity and just how dangerous he was with the ball in his hands. You know, look, Stroud, Henderson, great players. Tony Brackens, great player, short-lived career here. You can make a case for Mike Peterson. Yeah, I don't know who the best linebacker is. We've talked about that. Is it Kevin Hardy? Is it Daryl Smith? Is it Mike Peterson? Paul Posluszny putting himself in the conversation. There's no debate, and I think that's part of the reason you hold Rasheen, or we hold Rasheen in such high regard. There's no debate to me that he's the best corner. I think he's the best defensive back, as we just stated. So you're talking about one of the three major position groups on defense where he's the clear-cut best. You can argue Tony Brack is the best pass rusher that they ever had. Is he the best defensive lineman? Well, you get a better debate on that. And maybe all of those guys, in your opinion, are better players than Rasheen Mathis. Doesn't matter. He was, and I think ultimately will be remembered extremely fondly here. I think those last couple of years here in Jacksonville where it was a constant critique, Rasheen can't cover, Rasheen can't tackle. I think some of it, as we've outlined, I don't know how many times over the years, some of it was Reggie Nelson playing behind him and getting out of position and not giving him the right help at the right time. I was told that by an assistant coach that At times, you know, Rasheen would turn around and look back, and Reggie Nelson's supposed to be picking up the guy over the top, and there's no one there. All of a sudden, Rasheen's playing catch-up, and it looks like he just got burned on a double move by a guy, and that wasn't always the case. It's not always easy to figure that out just from watching the game. That's why it's important to try to dig into it a little bit more. But, you know, overall, the thing I'll think about with Rasheen the most, probably those interception returns for touchdowns versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. But anytime he got the ball in his hands, anytime he intercepted the ball, he was thinking score and had the capability of doing it, more so than any defender that the Jags have ever had. He just had a unique knack, great open field runner with the ball in his hands, had the speed, obviously was physical enough, as those tackle numbers would indicate. And, you know, I think, too, going to Detroit and playing as solidly as he did for the last, you know, particularly the first 2 years he was there, I think sure. puts a nice cap on his career that it wasn't, you know, a half dozen good years and then a slide into oblivion. He kind of rectified himself and righted the ship a little bit.
Yeah, and in a secondary that outside of Rasheen Mathis, honestly, has been a mess in Detroit. And it was part of the reason that he was signed there was kind of be that veteran guy while they were trying to bring in some young guys and let them grow up a little bit and still be able to put out a guy like Rasheen Mathis on a snap-by-snap basis, and he just earned the job. I don't know that Detroit signed Rasheen Mathis with the intention being he's going to be our starting corner for 2.5 years, but he was still a good enough player that he held off some young, talented players and kept the starting position in this league and played pretty well.
I got this tweet in from @AdamCreative. He said, yes, Rasheen Inglewood, I played with him. He played quarterback and a little defense. He was a man among boys back then, as you can imagine. You know, I mean, you got a guy that has that kind of athleticism, even by NFL terms. He was a guy with phenomenal athleticism. And, you know, it kind of makes me sick a little bit, Tony, that guys like that can do whatever they want. Oh, I'll play quarterback. I'll play safety. I'll play cornerback. I saw Rasheen maybe a month ago out at St. John's Golf and Country Club, and he's always been the guy, ever since he got the golf bug, it's been something that's intrigued him. And anyone who's ever played knows all you have to do is look at Jordan Spieth yesterday. You can't master the game. It's impossible to have it dialed in, but that is his new goal. He told me, I've never really taken time to learn how to play golf, to break down my swing. And I can just tell now he's got all his free time on his hands, right? He's got all the money he wants. He's going to play a heck of a lot of golf, Tony, and he's going to be so serious about it. And he's going to break down that swing and take, you know, do it the right way and take lessons. And I will not be surprised at whatever heights that he's able to reach as an amateur golfer out there. He's that kind of athlete, and that kind of dedication, I think, will pay off for him as well. 641-1010 if you want to get in. That's the text line number as well, which is driven by Duval for today's question of the day, asking you about, give us three of the biggest collapses that come to mind when you talk about sports history. Obviously, in honor, if you want to say, or in recognition of what happened yesterday, particularly on the 12th hole at Augusta National with Jordan Spieth letting it all get away at one point, a five-stroke lead, making the turn after four consecutive birdies, and then after leading the Masters for seven consecutive rounds going back to last year, an unprecedented feat, looking to go wire-to-wire back-to-back years, letting it all get away from him on the back nine. 641-1010, that's the number. We'll get to your feedback coming up on that momentarily as well. If you'd like to weigh in on the Facebook page, that's open for business. You can hit us up on Twitter as well with that. A couple of other little things going on right now. Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net. We have him on fairly regularly here, and probably get him on again maybe later this week as it's getting down to crunch time with the NFL draft coming up. Says that Dallas wants Jalen Ramsey, has him at the top of their board. Also saw, he said, Carson Wentz is, I believe, the third player on their board. Ramsey, I think, Tony, at this point, there's like a 1% chance that he'd be available with the fifth pick. If half of what you believe is right, people say that Tennessee are down to Tunsil and Ramsey. I've heard that. I heard that Ramsey's the number one player on Dallas's board. He may not even get to the Cowboys with San Diego picking there at three.
With some stories coming out that Dallas has been seriously talking to Tennessee about trying to get the one. They can go get Ramsey.
You wonder, that's what they say to get Ramsey. you haven't seen a defensive back go number one overall in 60-odd years. Are we going to see a team trade up to make that happen for the first time in six decades? I don't know.
I'd be curious.
I don't know if I can buy that. But that would be a win-now move for the Dallas Cowboys, who I think they are more in win-now mode. I don't think they'll draft a quarterback with that first pick. Jerry Jones has come out and said it. That doesn't mean that you can't misdirect people as much as you try to leading up to the draft, which, by the way, speaking of the draft, 2 weeks from Thursday, right? So that means a little prior to that, it's time for, I don't know what year it is on the media mock draft.
Well,
we're
no
in
idea.
Double figures, though, doing the media mock
easy.
Draft.
Yeah.
We're going to do it the way we did it last year. We're going to do it a day earlier. Last year we did it on Wednesday, literally the day before the NFL draft, giving ourselves a little more wiggle room in case there's some last-minute trades to get done. So what we're going to do a week from, 2 weeks from tomorrow, we're going to conduct the first half of the media mock draft. We'll have picks 1 through 16 during the time we're on the air with Jaguars today. And then we'll turn it over to the boys of XL Primetime, who'll pick up with picks 17 through 31. No New England Patriots, because they're bad, dirty people, and cheaters as well. So that's coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow, getting you ready in anticipation of the actual NFL draft. I'm heading up to Chicago. I don't know if I've told you that or not, but I'll be up there.
Before I left, it wasn't sure whether you'd be
going
or not.
It's sure now, so I'll be up there in Chicago. Tony will be holding down the fort on this end, and we'll bring you all the news that's pertinent in terms of your Jacksonville Jaguars making moves in the upcoming NFL draft. Coming back with the Fan Feedback Spotlight, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. What do you think are the three biggest collapses that come to mind for you in sports history? Maybe yesterday's was one of them. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Here's Dramatica. Romo holds. 19-yard field goal attempt. Oh, and it's fumbled by Romo. And then Romo's going to run to the end zone. And he's going to get tackled by Jordan Babineau. Amazing.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, the amazing thing is that Tyler Devitt built a time machine, and he used it to go back and record that off of a TV with a microphone held up to the TV. Well, I would have used that time machine, I don't know, to buy some Google stock or something like that when it was at a lower price.
Right.
But we appreciate that dedication.
Bet on the Cardinals, a futures bet for them to be in a Super Bowl.
Something like that.
About 15 years ago, no one would have believed.
Something like that, yes. so many things in Biff's big book of sports trivia.
Right.
That you could have gone with there. But is that even a collapse, Tony? Tony Romo drops a snap? I mean, it's a really bad play. It's a really bad play, but they're losing the game. They're down 21-20 at the time.
Yeah, I don't know. Football collapses, the ones that come to mind, obviously, are the playoff collapses that we've seen.
Houston up 35-3 or 38-3 maybe at one point in that game.
38-3, yeah.
Woo.
The Giants collapse against San Francisco in the 2000, was that two wild card year? It was the year Tampa won the Super Bowl. Whatever year
refresh
that
refresh my memory of the details.
The Giants had like a 31-point lead basically at halftime, yeah, and blew it in the second half. I was actually, at the time, I was working as an assistant youth minister with the church that I was attending.
Such a nice guy.
And it was a Sunday night game, so I got to watch the first half, and the Giants are just bullying this San Francisco team. And then I had to teach a class, so I didn't get to see like the third quarter basically of the game. And so, you know, my class ended, and I was like, well, let's go see how badly the Giants beat this team. The Giants were red hot going into the playoffs that year. I turned it on in time to see Terrell Owens scoring to basically tie the game up. A field goal followed that up for San Francisco to give them the lead, and then Trey Junkin couldn't snap a ball on a field goal. And the NFL came out the day after. They came out Monday and said that there should have been a pass interference call on San Francisco down the field, and the Giants should have been given an opportunity to re-kick that field goal.
Yeah, because they went to the scramble drill, right? And tried to
The NFL came out and told fans that they should have been able to retry that kick.
Love it. They would have missed it.
probably.
Make you feel better. This one,
Trey
was,
Duncan
this,
certainly
this one will make
made
you
it.
Feel a little bit better. This one may qualify. Kyle, remember Kyle Williams? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Catch the damn punt, Kyle. And,
that was beautiful.
This was for San Fran against the 49ers. And the
Giants.
49ers. All right, thank you. Against the Giants. San Fran against the 49ers. this is what this one sounded like.
Weatherford hits it. Kyle Williams lost the ball. It's recovered by the Giants. Jaquan Williams, the rookie, knocked it out. Second-year receiver, punt returner Kyle Williams with no Ted Ginn Jr. Available because of a knee injury. He's muffed a punt, and now this one is knocked out by Jaquan Williams, recovered by the Giants already. Inside field goal range.
Again, it's one bad play.
It is.
I think more a miracle at the Meadowlands, you know, because that's one, you know, that's
there's
not even
no
a play.
Reason for it to happen.
There's nothing else you need to do
yeah.
but not fumble the ball. And, but again, these are one play circumstances. You can look at Spieth and it's one hole really that he collapsed on, but he did go bogey leading into that. Let's look at what some of the responses we got today on Twitter and Facebook when we asked you today, courtesy of the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what are the three all-time worst sports collapses in history from your perspective? What do we get?
From Daniel, number one, Oilers blow that lead in the playoffs against the Bills. Number two, 2004 Yankees blowing the 3-0 series lead in the league championship series against the Sox.
And they scored like 17 in game three.
Yeah.
Right? They were just peppering the Green Monster. I just remember thinking, maybe save a few of those. Ah, it doesn't matter. They don't see, keep going. Pour it on.
Number three for Daniel, Jordan Spieth. This weekend from Black Dog Express, British Open, Vandeveld could have won with a double bogey. Instead, he took those shoes off and stepped into the creek. From 92, the Oilers lost to the Bills, and Norman at the Masters with a six-stroke lead when Faudo came back to win it. From Cristiano, Brazil, Germany, 2014 World Cup, and nothing else comes close. Hashtag still traumatized. Brazil, to refresh everyone's memory, lost that game 7-1 in the semifinals in their home base.
Now,
basically.
Is that a collapse or is just an unexpected blowout result?
For that nation, probably feels like a collapse.
Okay, that's
they
fine.
were heavily favored to win the World Cup.
Okay.
Brazil was, but they got embarrassed by Germany on their home turf. From Jarrell, Vandeveld 99 British Open, 04 Yankees ALCS collapse, and the 2007 Mavericks first round loss to the Golden State Warriors when they were the one seed playing the eight in the Western Conference. From Brian, Boris Spassky's loss to Bobby Fischer in chess in 1972, beginning of the end of the Cold War.
That's just Yankee ingenuity is what that was.
From Connor, Texas A&M's March Madness comeback went over you and I seemed to
it
have it in
happened.
The bag
yeah.
until they self-destructed.
That was a collapse, Tony. It was a good comeback, but it wasn't like they were hitting
they couldn't
ridiculous,
inbound a ball.
They were hitting ridiculous off-balance threes here.
Yeah. I mean, you're up whatever it was. You can't even get the other
get
team.
Get the ball inbounds and not give up an uncontested
yeah,
layup.
You can't even get a free throw out of it.
Right.
Like, in that situation in the game, they can't even get to the
free
catch throw
the ball,
line.
You get two free throws,
yeah.
basically.
Unreal.
At that point in the game. Here's some on Facebook that we got. Marshall said, Bucks versus Colts. Monday Night Football, Manning leading them back. We did mention that one. I mean, you could look at that from either perspective.
Was that the same game that had the leaping call on Simeon Rice? Was that the same Monday Night game with the field goal attempt where they called him from landing on his teammates?
On his back?
Yeah.
I want to say no.
I can't remember if
it was or
not. I could
be wrong about that. It may be the game where John Gruden dubbed Peyton Manning the sheriff, though.
Could have been.
I'm not...
I watched that whole game. I just can't remember.
I remember that
game.
And I remember thinking, you know, why does this, honestly, why doesn't this happen more? How many teams do you see in the fourth quarter? If I'm down in the fourth quarter by more than one score and I have the ball, I'm trying to score. I don't care if it's 1 minute in the fourth quarter. I'm trying to score as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
You don't know the seconds you save now won't come back to help you later. So you see so many teams not kick it into that fifth gear. Until they get to the point almost of where they have to be perfect from that point forward. I just don't understand
sure.
it. And they showed you what they're, what it's capable of happening. You're not going to see it replicated too often, 21 points in 5 minutes. So you had that one. You had yesterday's Masters and, Jags at home versus the Colts in 06 when we won by a landslide. I was there. I guess he's saying that's a Colts collapse. Russell went with Jags 62-7 against Dan Marino. See, is that a collapse though? I mean, it's a blowout.
They're playing the best team in the AFC on the road. Like, I'm not sure that's a collapse.
They got boat raced out of the building.
Yeah.
To me, if they were up 21-3 and they lost the game, that's
a collapse. If it was like the 16-0 Patriots playing at home against the Jaguars that year, if the Jags had come in and beat them by 40, collapse. Because nothing you did in that season mattered at that point. Doesn't matter that you went 16-0 if you're going to lose that badly. Like, I don't consider the Super Bowl a collapse for that Patriots team just because of the way that game played out. But if there was a team that was that great, that was that much a favorite, that found a way to lose a game like that, especially big, then yeah, I'd consider that a collapse.
Oh, this is a good one. Zachary said Nick Anderson. He called him Brick Anderson. We understand why with the Orlando Magic against the Rockets. When all you need to do is hit one of four free throws and you miss all four, and then Kenny Smith, what was the sequence? They missed all four, then Kenny Smith hit the three to tie it, I think, and they lost it in overtime, if my foggy memory serves me correctly. Now, they got swept 4-0, but they certainly let the Rockets off the hook in game one of that series, at least. A few more here in no particular order. 2004 ALCS, 2004 ALCS, and the 2004 ALCS.
Yeah, that's
top three.
It's a pretty memorable one.
Understood. Stephen K. Brown went with the 1951 Brooklyn Dodgers.
That's a shot heard around the world.
Right. Is it a collapse? I don't know if that's a collapse. I mean, it was a great, phenomenal finish, and maybe the most well-known finish of a ball game in Major League history. I don't know if I'd consider it a collapse unless there was, I don't know the details of the season, like if the Dodgers had a huge lead on the Giants, which they may have, because that was a one-game playoff because they tied with the same record on the final day of the regular season.
I think there was a collapse. I'm not sure if it was the same level of collapse as like the 2011 Red Sox.
Right.
Right, where they went 7-20 over the last month of the season and actually would have made the playoffs still. I believe that the Yankees, if they had beaten Tampa Bay that last day of the season, that the Red Sox would have snuck in as a wild card, and the Yankees had a 7-0 lead in their game against Tampa Bay and blew that game. Evan Longoria, I remember, hitting a home run over the left field wall, actually kept the Red Sox out of the playoffs when the Tampa Bay Rays came back, and that clinched them a spot in the playoffs.
Might
over
have served
Boston
him one
Red
over
Sox.
The heart of the plate for a reason
right.
there.
Well, how about all this right. one? In the Alamo Bowl this year, Oregon was trailing 31 to, or Oregon was leading 31-0 at halftime, and they lost 47-41 in triple OT to TCU.
I think that qualifies.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're up that big in a game. It's one thing if you're the big favorite. Like Georgetown was a huge favorite over Villanova. They didn't collapse, though. They got beat.
Yeah.
But they didn't collapse. It was a nip-and-tuck game that went down to the very final seconds of that game.
Sure.
I don't look at that. You know, like Houston, do they collapse against NC State? Well, they didn't play their best. They got taken out of their game. But I think more, like in the case with Spieth, big lead. I mean, you're engraving the trophy. I mean, guys, he's got 7-under. Nobody else is more than 2-under.
Right.
He makes a turn. He's got 4 straight birdies. Are you kidding me? He's got a birdie for 13 and 15 coming in, which he did. So I'll get him to 9, Tony. I can throw a few random bogeys in there. And he finishes 7-under in his sleep. And he walks away, and he's a 3-time major champion at the age of what, 22, 23 years old?
22.
Unbelievable. But
amen corner.
He gagged it up. What can you say about that? A lot of other ones
I'm
in
surprised
here.
No one mentioned 95 Reggie Miller against the Knicks.
That was not a collapse. That was I don't believe that actually happened. The Bills come back versus the Oilers. Eagles scored 28 in the fourth quarter against the Giants in 2010. Is that the D-Jacks return the punt?
Yeah.
For good decision by TC there to kick that one.
He
to,
told him to not kick it there.
Did he tell him stridently enough? Apparently not.
Because the expression on Tom Coughlin's face as soon as like DeSean Jackson caught the thing was just, are you serious? I told him to kick it out of bounds. Like, you could see it in his face.
You need to say, look, you hear there are two choices. You kick it out of bounds or you're fired, right? Those are your choices. If DeSean Jackson gets the ball in any capacity here, then you're fired. You no longer have a job. But as a little bit of heartbreak for you. I think the Yankees have had the that's probably honestly the biggest collapse, as much as it pains me. Up
3-0
3-0
in the championship series against your biggest rival.
And rolling them.
Yeah.
Rolling them at that point in time. All right,
with
there you
Rivera
go.
Rivera as your closer, I mean, game four, it felt like it was done.
Game four, it was done. Game seven, it should have been done, you know, but it wasn't. So, hey.
I'm glad nobody mentioned the most painful one for me.
Which was? And, do tell. Do tell.
I'm not mentioning it in front of you ever again. Like, someone else has to bring it up. I'm not talking about
it. Is this Braves versus Pirates?
No, that was fantastic. That was one of my favorites.
Okay.
That may be my favorite sports memory of my life.
That's right. You won that one. What am I thinking? Is it a Braves related?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing
cuts me like the Braves.
Nothing cuts you like the Braves. You're not talking about 96.
Oh, God.
I mean, that was, you saw that coming a mile away. You don't think that was a collapse. That was
no,
a setup.
No.
Tony, that was a setup.
Freaking Wolves.
Tony.
What a loser.
Oh, my goodness. That was fantastic. All right. I'm going to mention that one tomorrow.
Jim
Leyritz. Choke and Doke, that got thrown in there a few times as well. That's a good one. See that? Now I feel better, and I can end the show on a more positive note with the Choke and Doke. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for popping in. Thanks to our friends at Wild West Guns and Gold. They bring you the show every Monday. So happy to have Fat Tony back. I'm sure you are as well. Creeping ever closer. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks away from the media mock draft, maybe 12th annual, something like that, that we've done, and we'll find out exactly who the media thinks all the teams will take, and then we'll find out only three or four of them really had a clue as to who their team was actually going to take. That's usually how those things work. That's just kind of the nature of it, but it's a fun exercise nonetheless. That does it for us. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey, signing off for Jaguars today. XL Primetime is coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.